Welcome again to the Cannabis Investing Podcast, where we speak with C-level executives, scientists, and law and sector experts to provide actionable investment insights and the context with which to understand the burgeoning cannabis industry. I'm your host, Rena Sherbel. Hi again, everybody. Welcome back to the last show of 2020. I hope, as everybody does, that 2021 brings us a brighter year. Perhaps not if on January 1st, certainly soon enough. Although, honestly, in the cannabis industry, the year 2020 was a really positive one. We've seen a lot of growth in the industry. We've talked about how it's progressed companies. You know, last year at this time, we were still talking about deals and which deals will go through and, you know, who's on the path to profitability. Right now, there are companies right at profitability and looking to go past that. Today, we're talking with Saul Kay, who is fitting that it's the last episode of the year, because as we close one chapter, we begin another. And Saul started us on this chapter of cannabis investing podcasting. We had our first interview with Saul, and we really cut our teeth at Cannatech 2019, which is Saul is the CEO and founder of ICANN, and ICANN, one of their flagship conferences, is Cannatech in Tel Aviv, kind of the Davos of cannabis investing. Saul tells us that hopefully we have June 2021 to look forward to for a return of that conference life. And, you know, that's so integral to the cannabis industry. It will be good to get back to that on a personal level, on a professional level. And just as all the excitement is, you know, heating up, continuing to heat up around the states, and we've talked a lot about, you know, the MSOs and what we can look for, what we're looking for in the USO space a lot in the past few months. Today, we're talking about Israel. Saul is one of the foremost activists and professionals working on behalf of advancing the cause of cannabis and also psychedelics, which we get into towards the end of the conversation, and what kind of work Israel is doing for psychedelics and what we can look for there. But in terms of cannabis, Saul gives us the down and dirty details about how hard it is to make a systemic change, which Israel is trying to do by moving. You know, we've had legal medical cannabis for a while now, but we're on the path to fully legalizing adult use. But as Saul says, it's going to take some time. We were hopeful a couple months ago when the government said that within 9 months, there will be adult use cannabis. But of course, now listeners who follow Israel know, and those who don't will find out on this episode, that we're going to be having new elections in Israel in March. So that definitely throws a wrench into any talks of cannabis, because it throws a wrench into any talks of what's to come, because now everybody is focused on another election. So there is still hope in Israel, as Saul tells us why there's still hope, but it's definitely going to be a longer process. But in the meantime, I think that gives us as investors kind of more time to get in on the ground floor. And Saul elucidates which companies look better than others. We get into Candoc, who just did a deal with Charlotte's Web to bring high medical grade CBD into Israel, Canarava, Kronos, Canasure, Isracan Biosciences, which is a public play on the U.S. markets as a way to get in on the Israel grows. But as Saul says, you know, there's no live grows yet. So we're really still betting on the promise of some of these Israeli companies, and whose promise is better, or who is closer to those achieving those promises. You know, we know companies like Intercure has the backing of a former Israeli prime minister, and Saul gets into how so many former ministers in the government, national security directors, are in the cannabis space. And, you know, as we've heard from pretty much every guest that's been on this podcast, the train has left the station. It's just a matter of which train you want to board as an investor. But in terms of it being a place to put your money, I think that's already been established. It's just who to put your money on. And Saul gives us a lot of guidance in that. And also we get into a great conversation about medicine and treatment and what cannabis can do, what psychedelics can do. Saul talks about how he thinks, you know, the next crisis after, you know, being talked about so much, the opioid crisis, how the crisis next to be discussed will be the SSRI crisis, how so many people have been prescribed SSRIs as a way to combat depression and anxiety, and how cannabis and psychedelics, you know, are really the future of those treatments, and in a lot safer way, even though that's not what a lot of us were brought up with. So a great conversation. I hope a great one to get you into the new year. A lot of positive things to look forward to, and a lot of time to heal from, I would call it, the traumas of this past year. And I hope everybody is doing just that, healing and looking forward. So happy 2021, everybody. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice of any sort. I'm Long Trulieve, Chiron, and Isercan Biosciences. You can subscribe to us on Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. And we'd really appreciate you leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts so other investors can find our show. Saul, welcome back. Our very first guest, welcome back to the podcast. It's great to have you back on the Cannabis Investing Podcast.
Thanks, Rena. It's been a definitely challenging, interesting year. Lots have happened since I was last on. But yeah, the cannabis is about to really start turning on in Israel in 2021. We're pretty exciting.
Yeah, right. It's what's that quote that some weeks happen in a month and some months happen in a, I feel like we've had a century happen this year, at the very least. But yeah, Israel is like a very exciting place to be for cannabis. I mean, it kind of always has been, but it's certainly kind of progressing right now. I'd love for you to catch listeners up on what's happening right now in Israel, the kind of trajectory of going adult use legal, how you see that happening, how these imminent elections that our listeners may not know about, but that are happening in a few months, how that may affect things. What are your thoughts there?
So it's, you know, cannabis has rolled out a medical program in Israel. It's been pretty successful at getting cannabis into pharmacies, getting more patients into the program. So we're at 80,000 patients now, which is pretty incredible growth. But, you know, with COVID happening, it's not the top priority in the government. The government did say they are going to full adult use legalization according to the Canada model, which they announced, I guess, 3 months ago, and they said within a nine-month time frame. I don't believe that. I think that's way, way, way too fast. But the law basically allows for adults over the age of 21 to buy but not consume cannabis on premises from dedicated cannabis shops. That's the law. There's nothing. There's nothing else to it. So from that stage, it goes down to the Misrad HaMishpatim, the Office of Lawmakers, who then have to actually write that law. So even if that does pass in 9 months, and we don't know if it will now with the current election status, for your listeners, we announced yesterday that the Knesset is dissolving because they couldn't get to a budget. And so we're going back to elections for the fourth time in, 2 years. So without a guiding government from above, I don't see the timeline being realistic, but I think the sentiment is real, in that cannabis is out of the box. There are other legal countries. It's, you know, the sky didn't fall down when cannabis was legal in Canada, right? So they really are looking to that, and they're looking for the economic growth that it can bring. But I'm, you know, still hesitant that they're not going to allow everyone to participate in the industry, especially those that have been in the underground industry for so long. It becomes very, very prohibitively expensive to set up cannabis in Israel, and that leaves a large portion of the population unable to tap into this new economy. So I really hope that there's some, you know, fiscal changes that might come with this as well.
It's interesting. I mean, you and Isercan are kind of leading the charge in Israel's cannabis, you know, in terms of propelling us forward here. It's interesting to me when I read that we're basing our model on the Canada model, it seems like, why are we basing our model on the Canada model? It wasn't so successful. What are your thoughts there?
I think it's easy. Canada and Israel and Britain and Australia all have the old British laws, right? So it's easy to sort of follow along with that. It's the first G7 nation that legalized. So it's simple. It's easy. They can say whatever they did, we'll learn from it. Maybe we'll pick up some tips and tricks. They probably won't, but let's go with what they did. For an innovation nation, startup nation, we're pretty bad on the law side. We're great at innovating. We just get stuck in bureaucracy and caca at the end of the day, and it's so frustrating. I applied for my pharmacy. I'm a pharmacist. My pharmacy to dispense cannabis. We're 7 months into the process, and they still haven't approved us. Simple bureaucracy. It's sitting between the office of the Ministry of Health and the police, who have to do background checks because I have investors from overseas. Now, my pharmacy dispenses opioids and every other medication. What is the difference now with cannabis? There seems to be still a major sort of disconnect between the logic of cannabis and actually what's happening. But we're hoping for good things, and eventually we'll begin and be part of this revolution here.
Do you think that's it? Like, at the start of any revolution, there's going to be resistance, especially for something that, some people consider to still be a drug or a gateway drug or whatever their kind of nefarious label is for cannabis. Do you think it's just a matter of outgrowing those outdated notions? Or do you think there's something more, like, the pharma industry or what have you?
I don't think so. I think the pharma industry and big beverage and tobacco and big distribution definitely did slow the pace at which cannabis, came about. Their lobby is pushing for cannabis, but in 2 years' time, because they were basically hit in the face with no pipeline of beverages, no pipeline of edibles or foods. When CBD became legal at the beginning of 2019 as a consequence of the hemp farm bill. So they have, I think, have been slowing it down on a regulatory side so that they can catch up. But that's a unique opportunity in the market where, we called it pop-up cannabis in California, right? So your dispensary would be there one day, it wouldn't be there the next day. And that's kind of how it feels in Israel at the moment, where lots of people are trying to get into the industry, but it's so complicated that they're actually moving more towards the black market, which is the opposite of what we want. We want a good quality product at a good price that's available conveniently. Unfortunately, when you look at the model like Canada and what they're planning here, it's not going to be convenient. I want home delivery. I currently get my cannabis home delivered from the black market. Why is that going to be different when it's a legal market? It just doesn't make sense. So, we're hoping for some nice, good things. But in the meantime, patients are receiving the medication. We're, registered 180 doctors who can directly prescribe cannabis. We're rolling out a software system in January that enables doctors to onboard cannabis patients and does the whole intake process and makes it simple for more doctors to see more patients. And hopefully that can, remove the stigma and really start to pump this industry.
Well, that's the thing. You guys are also, from the beginning have been set on more the medical side of cannabis as opposed to the adult use. And when you look at the medical side, after some fits and starts and after some, kind of bad moments in that trajectory, it feels like it's more, doctors are more able to prescribe it, more patients are able to receive it. Are you encouraged by that side and hopeful that that kind of lends itself to the adult use?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the challenge has been this year with COVID that all the in-person learning that doctors, pharmacists, and nurses were getting from the Ministry of Health have stopped. So there hasn't been a new pharmacist or doctor approved since like March. And that's just too slow. There's a huge shortage of cannabis pharmacists in Israel. In order to get a cannabis license within a pharmacy, you have to go through that course. So there is a bottleneck still, but I think, yeah, inertia seems to be behind us. We seem to be rolling a little bit better with the punches. There's still a huge outcry from the patient population, where in the old reform, they used to pay $100 a month, no matter the quantity of cannabis that the doctor prescribed. So we had patients with 200 grams a month. We had patients with 10 grams a month. And the average is about 40 grams a month per patient in Israel. So with the new reform, we're now into a regular pricing system, and there is low quality, cheaper cannabis on the market at about, I don't know, $30 for 10 grams. And all the way up to premium at $100 for 10 grams, right? So getting to more like the retail system in the US, you know, which is an average, I would say, of about $10 a gram for a decent product. And so that has hurt patients, certainly those that can't afford it. And because we have a national health system here in Israel, so all medications are effectively covered by the government with a small copay from the patient, that hasn't hit yet with cannabis, and cannabis is not covered by the private health insurance. So it really is an out-of-pocket expense, and something that you know, so far only the wealthy can afford, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, at the beginning of lockdown, I was at a few protests here in Tel Aviv, and the people that were getting up at the end, one of their complaints was the cannabis. And, you know, there were cancer patients getting up there and saying they don't have the money to pay for this, they're suffering, and there's just so many regulations that need to be improved there. And it's also interesting, I don't know if everyone knows like how big per capita Israel is as a cannabis market. I mean, the citizens want their cannabis, and the government needs money. It seems like it should be a kind of surefire solution there, but here we are, I guess.
Yeah, it defies logic, I guess. You know, there's bipartisan support across all the national groups, the Arab parties, the ultra-Orthodox parties, the middle, the left, and the right, that everyone wants cannabis. So why is the inertia happening? It's astounding to me. But, you know, it's the bureaucracy of Israel. They're really good at making you run between different offices, and it's just too slow. And on the flip side, you've got all the major sort of politico or ex-politico personalities who are in the cannabis industry now. Ehud Barak, Ehud Olmert, former prime ministers of Israel. You've got their ex-chief of police. You've got the ex-head of Mossad, all sitting on the directory of cannabis companies. So you know, everyone agrees this is going to happen. No one can really put their finger on how long it takes. But you know, systemic change takes a long time. I've now been in cannabis for 7 years. And nothing has really changed all that much. Patients used to be able to get it with a prescription. Now it's in a pharmacy. There's a few more patients, and there's now lots of growers coming online and lots of products about to hit the market in Israel without necessarily that core consumer base yet. We're all predicting that that's going to grow to 100,000, 200,000 patients in the next year. But systemic change takes time. Look at the civil rights movement. You know, 20, 30, 40 years is normal. So now we're accelerating that because of, you know, social media, because of the access to information that people have. Look at the revolution happening in psilocybin and medicinal mushrooms and psychedelics. There's rapid adoption, and it's a, you know, top 10 trending term in Google at the moment. So searchability and information at your fingertips, and recognizing that these molecules that come from plants are generally safe. Yes, there are safeguards around them that we need to keep. But if they're safe, then why are we still in prohibition?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm curious what you think of the new export laws that now Israel is able to export. There was Intercure, speaking of Intercure, Ehud Barak's company, they did a deal with Afria and Tilray, who recently merged. What do you think about what's happening there?
I think it's a disappointment that we have to import cannabis from Canada, Uruguay, Portugal, and Lesotho. in order to meet the demand in the market. The demand in the market in Israel is high THC. The categories that the government here has set out, we don't go by strains, we go by category. So a common category is T20C1, right? So high THC, low CBD, basically what you would find in a recreational market. That product is not something that the growers here had. The growers here had products very similar to someone like Bedrocan in the Netherlands, right? Which supplies the pharmacies in Germany with good quality 15% THC bud, right? That has kind of changed because the consumer demand is high THC for medical, for pain. So we're seeing a mix here of about 90% of the product being T20 and above, and the local growers not having developed those strains over the last 10, 12 years because they've been focusing much more on things like Avideca, which is the opposite. It's C20, T1, so a 20-to-1 ratio. And that's available in the US now through Tikkun Olam. So that has been their focus, and the focus shifted and the market wasn't ready, so we had to import. So I see it as actually, not great. But now with export out of Israel, it becomes a different story. So now we really have to look at what are the international markets, because every deck that I see for a cannabis grower in Israel doesn't look at the local market. They look at the export market and they quote the size of the German market and the number of patients that are going to be there. And ultimately, Israel is the largest consumer of medical cannabis in the world right now. And because the regulation took so long and it takes so much bureaucracy to get your grow up and ready, and then there are distributors and the pharmacy network wasn't ready, we just missed the mark. So that import ultimately should stop. Because the local product should be here. But, you know, I want Canadian bud if I can get it. You know, I've had some of the Peace Naturals that's arrived in Israel. It's very, very good. So if we can get that quality and a good price, then let's open a real global market in cannabis. It shouldn't be local. But a brand of Israeli weed, Israeli bud, Israeli cannabis is exportable, as is Jamaican, as is Colombian, as is Canadian. And so that needs to really be strengthened. We said we were going to export cannabis from last January, almost a year ago. And a few kilograms has moved, not the stock that's been stockpiled here ready for export. It's just the bureaucracy again, taking too long to get something that has been approved. Everyone says you can do it. How do you do it? Where do you move it? What do you do? That's still sort of the balagan, the mess in the system.
And in terms of developing the types of cannabis that we're growing locally here, domestically here, do you think that expands as the laws open up? Do you think it takes kind of more regulations opening up until there's more kind of variety and different types?
No, it takes time because it takes 7 generations to stabilize a genetic, right? So breeders have been doing that in California, and the few breeders here that were doing it have done it. But then, you know, you have to stabilize those genetics for the environment in Israel. We have different climates. We have different spectrum of light. Cannabis behaves different here to where, you know, in California. So when you bring a strain over, it doesn't always succeed. And then it takes some time to breed in the things that you want. It might be you're breeding in the prevention of certain bugs that, you know, thrive on cannabis here but don't affect cannabis in California. And mold and botrytis is a major problem with the Israeli growers because they're growing in greenhouses, which are less controlled than an indoor operation. But we're now seeing indoor flower coming into the Israeli market from CanDoc has one, CanAssure has an indoor facility, and CanArava, Kronos. So the indoor market, you know, that's more of a premium market, is starting to come in Israel now. So I think, yeah, it's just time. It takes time.
And when you look across the landscape, you know, for U.S. listeners or for people invested in the U.S. market, Isrecan Biosciences is the only Israel public play in the U.S. markets. But what are your thoughts on the other companies? And you can include Istrocan Biosciences if you want, but what are some companies that you feel like are doing it the right way?
So I think Canndoc is doing the best job in the market. They just signed their agreement with Charlotte's Web to bring CBD into Israel. CBD in Israel, the law has been written. It is now out of the dangerous drug ordinance, but still isn't on shelves because we haven't written the law of who can import, who can move, who can, you know, make products, which products can be made. And so, you know, bringing in a medicinal CBD brand like Charlotte's is a great move. So Canndoc is schooling everyone in the industry. Istrocan, unfortunately, you know, they're a Canadian listed stock with grows here in Israel, but the grows aren't live yet. Product hasn't hit the shelves. And as we know, with investing, especially in early stage public companies, you invest on the promises. The value is built by the realization of those promises. So we've been in a slump with most of the cannabis companies that are public, whether on the Canadian, on the Tel Aviv, there's one on the NASDAQ, they've been in a slump because people aren't buying the promise anymore. We want to see the results. I want to see the balance sheet because look at Aurora, look at Canopy, huge, huge investments, massive, massive output. Aurora just closed a 250,000 square foot facility just because they can't grow. They can't grow it. There's no demand for it yet. So, you know, jumping too fast, too hard is also, you know, kind of a mistake that you know, everyone repeated. But yeah, looking at a broad strategy with both CBD and hemp products and medicinal cannabis, backed into strong distribution, good supply agreements across the world. Canndoc, again, has Tilray, has the new Uruguay grow coming on board. You know, that's some power behind someone like that. I think IMC is doing a fabulous job as well. Strong relationships into Germany, into pharmacies, good manufacturer. And Intellicana, and I'm an investor in Intellicana for you know, the purposes of full disclosure. You know, they've got some awesome flower about to hit the market, and I think they're building slowly with the market and doing it smart. I've seen way too much money flow into this industry and get lost. I like the players that are bootstrapping it, that are doing it, you know, doing the hard work. And growing with the industry. I think that's where I see value in the companies.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly what we've seen in the States. It's the kind of the companies that, for the most part, it's the companies that were bootstrapped or honed in on one state or honed in on one market, and then were able to kind of expand, as opposed to here we are in 12 markets and look at us, we're so exciting. And then a year later, they're in one market or, you know. Right. So yeah, it's definitely kind of a model to follow. I'm interested in your thoughts. Like, there was a lot of promise about Germany as a medical market. Do you feel like that's just a matter of time before that develops in the way that people are expecting it to?
Yeah, it's like here. Doctors can prescribe, patients can say they can get it, but the supply chain isn't in place yet. Whether from they didn't allow initially local growers, they only wanted to import, then they allowed only 5 licenses. In Israel, we now must have probably over 100 growers with product hitting the shelves by Q1 next year. You know, and Israel's the size of New Jersey. How many licenses are in New Jersey? It should be that way, but it's not yet. So time will help to fix these things, hopefully.
And when we do go adult use, is that when the market opens up in terms of kind of the edibles and the different types of forms that you can get your cannabis in? Do you think it requires that change for that to happen?
I think it's slowly happening, definitely on the black market, and we're starting to see more availability of products, most of it imported. I think, yeah, it happens. It depends on the rollout and what the government allows us to do. Right now, it's a flower oil only market, and the recreational will follow that. I think we'll see medicinal edibles before we see recreational edibles. But matter of time. The consumer wants it. We've seen from statistics, you know, you look at New Frontier data and you look at BDS analytics, the trend is very clear. Flower decreases from a consumer perspective, and vaping edibles go up. And topicals. We don't have a topical yet in Israel. Can you believe it?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's crazy that those things aren't available. I have a doctor friend who's just like incensed that she can't prescribe that to patients in those forms.
Especially because most of that is CBD based from hemp. There should be no reason that can't come into the country right now from Colorado. And it is. It's coming in on a B2C consumer direct model. So lots of websites who are shipping into Israel, the customs doesn't stop CBD products anymore. So consumers can get product. It just, you have to jump through those hoops, which is unfortunate.
Or pay a lot of money.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts in terms of, as the market grows, what do you think, how do you think Israel is a player in the global market? Where do you think it stands? And what do you think that looks like? Let's say we're talking 2 years from now, and we've had two more elections. No, just kidding. And we're talking 2 years from now. What do you think happens with the market?
So I think the next 2 years, we're going to focus internally. We're going to look at the local market and, you know, less the big international players. Those will be done maybe by the public companies, but most of the market here is going to start to focus locally. You know, we will see a better product set coming to market, hopefully better prices, but the real win will come where the HMOs, the health insurance companies, are covering cannabis as a medicine. Because if medicinal cannabis and recreational cannabis coexist, and they do, you know, you have to have a differentiator. In Colorado, the differentiator is lower tax and higher THC limits in your products. And that works well. So if we do the same thing here, we can really keep the momentum in that medical market. And medical and recreational are different products at the end of the day. When we're treating, you know, cancers, and Dedi Meiri has identified the three cannabinoids that we have that work for a specific cancer, and that drug will go into a pharmacy via prescription. It's different to what happens now, where you get a license to buy antibiotics and you go to your antibiotic store and you ask your antibiotic vendor, which antibiotic is best for my cough, right? That isn't yet really medical. And so there's sort of this dichotomy between, you know, doctors who want to control the amount of product that a patient uses, right? So kind of thinking like it's an opioid. We'll give you a certain amount and we define it, as opposed to a patient-centric model where the patient tells the doctor how much they need and what they're using and which one, and the guidance. The guidance in the system doesn't yet exist. You go to a doctor to get a prescription, not really to get therapy. And you buy that from a pharmacy and you may get a small consult, but you know, there are a few people in Israel who are becoming sort of influencers in the guidance of cannabis. And they've set up clinics or they've set up remote, systems that allow patients to access caregivers, not bud tenders, not necessarily pharmacists, not necessarily doctors, but people who are very experienced in cannabis that can help guide someone's journey, because it is a journey. It's something that you have to learn which ones work for you. Not all cannabis is going to work for everyone. High THC products, my mother doesn't like. She gets cannabis on the system for Crohn's, right? One of the approved conditions here in Israel. But she doesn't like to get high. So we found a good mix of higher CBD, lower THC, lots of CBG that has helped put her in, you know, a much, much better situation. But I'm there guiding her, helping her with lots of experience. That needs to be available to everyone. And so that's kind of where I see it. A strong medical, I think people, you know, who now know about cannabis want medical cannabis. Recreational users, who, you know, you can enjoy your wine and you can take your wine tablet. There's a new wine tablet out of Israel that's, you know, comes out of a bioreactor. It's called Vinia. And, you know, there are lots of antioxidants in wine. So you can take your tablet, that's a medicine or a nutraceutical, you can still drink your wine. Both can exist and happily exist together and shouldn't interfere with each other. But the focus is different, you know.
It's interesting, you know, we've had some guests on the podcast that really are reticent about the bifurcation or saying that there's a bifurcation of the market, that there's this medical and that there's this adult use, that cannabis is cannabis, and even adult use patients or consumers, whatever you want to call them, also need a guide. You know, it's not just about, oh, just give me the joint and I'll take whatever you have. Like, as a way of developing our, kind of what you're saying, as a way of developing our understanding of what cannabis is. But I think as a pharmacist, your point is also a valid one, or maybe more valid in terms of, look, there's different things for different people and they need different things. It's interesting. And it also, you know, there's been a lot of complaints about companies, you know, Dosas is the first example that comes to mind in terms of companies that are like sleep, calm, you know, just like one word label for what this is going to do. And that's not necessarily the effect that it has on everybody. And what are your thoughts there in terms of that bifurcation?
I think you'll have your sommelier of cannabis who can, you know, go into the flavors and the tastes and how to cook with it and how to experience cannabis from a recreational perspective. And that's the guide that will exist in that market. And the pharmacist, the doctor, the bud tender even is much more for the medical. But that's when there's aggregated data that I can say and put my finger, this strain helps for this condition if you have this genetic predisposition, if these are the medications that you're taking, and really start to look at the medical, real medical side. So, and ultimately the medical, you know, you'll take a test. There's a company called Endocanna, which does a genetic test to look at which cannabinoids may not fit your genome. You know, with alcohol, Asian people only have one of the enzymes which break down alcohol, which make them get drunk a lot faster. They get red faces. They don't break down red wine as well. And there's been a whole industry developed for that market for their not only taste, but their physical effect of what alcohol does for them. So genetics plays a part in recreation as well. But when we can tie it in and I can say, okay, you're a really sick patient. You've got autoimmune diseases. You've got, you know, lots of Ashkenazi diseases. You're not a well patient. Then we can start to dial in really what will help. And when we get the data on what the product contains. So right now we're only testing a few cannabinoids, THC, CBD, maybe CBG. And CBN in Israel, we're not really looking at the minors. And the minors is where cannabis becomes really interesting for some of the more chronic diseases. So I think that will all develop in the medical market, irrespective. So yes, bifurcation, but you also get crossover, right? So a recreational user who goes in because they want to enjoy a wine, right, will recognize that their knee pain goes away. And then we'll go, hey, what can I do? I don't need to get high and have wine all the time for my knee pain. What can I do for that on a regular basis that's going to improve my pain? And so that's a flip from the rec to the medical. And then there's medical patients. I know pain patients who use 10, 11 different strains in order to manage their pain. There's morning, there's afternoon, there's creative, there's sleepy, there's all those different effects. And so it's personal, and he wants the ability to go in and buy a range of different things. So maybe even for a treatment of medical for him, if he's dialed in or her dialed in enough to their own bodies, you can treat yourself. You're your own master sergeant in this case. But not everyone is able to do that.
And it would also, I imagine, come down to, for some people, like, they prefer smoking. For some people, they prefer a balm. For some people, they prefer edible. That also, I imagine, has to do with the, you know, the inherent chemistry that the body has.
Is that correct? Right? I think, look, everyone knows that smoking is a rapid effect, very repeatable. You get used to the taste. For people who haven't smoked, it's obviously an issue. Edibles is still an issue. As much as we try and control what's in it, our stomachs process cannabis in a different way. And some of the metabolites, we've got delta 9 in the plant. That's the common isomer of THC in your stomach. It's sometimes converted to delta 5 and sometimes converted to delta 11. Delta 11 is 10 times more potent than delta 9. So even if you've got a standardized product, your stomach is not standard, right? Different acids, different food, different mood. And so you're going to process edible cannabis differently than you do smoked cannabis. So, you know, taking that into account, I think a good mix, and it really should be up to the patient. You know, a nasal spray, a inhaler, things that are convenient for you to take with you when you go out, vaporizers, things like that. You know, dealing with flour, grinding it, rolling cigarettes, putting it into a bong. It's all, you got to deal with it. And dealing with something often causes an addiction. That's, you know, the smoking sensation. It's partly the nicotine, and that's very addictive. But there's also the movement, that after you eat, you want to have a coffee, you want to have a cigarette. It's becomes part of the lifestyle. So with people with addictive natures, you want to avoid maybe smoking and look at cleaner habits. But then you've got things like the vape scare that came along, where you're cutting oils with other ingredients because it's more economical. But we don't have enough data on vaporized cannabis from oil. It seems to be pretty safe. We've got good data that it's way safer than smoking cigarettes. Is it better than smoking cannabis? Is edible cannabis ultimately better? We don't have the longevity of studies to really know that.
And how long do you think before, just I'm curious, your kind of educated guess in terms of like a wide open market here, do you think it's 5 years? Do you think it's 10 years? Do you think, like, who knows? Because it depends on so many things.
No, I think a wide open medical market is like end of 21. No bottlenecks for patients to get. Kind of like in the US where you get a medical marijuana card. That'll be the system here, and it'll be, you know, relatively easy to access a card through pharmacies. The recreational market, I see it about 3 years away, would be my guess. For a real, you know, we're getting through the hiccups of the, you know, the birthing of a new industry and a new regulation, there are going to be mistakes, and it just takes time. So if we iron out those kinks over the first year of the industry, which is kind of what Canada did. We said in Canada, they went, we don't know what it looks like. Let's just do flower for a year, figure out then what the next product set that the consumers want, how to make. It's okay to take a year. As long as you've got patient access, it removes a lot of that stress, right? And decriminalization, so that people who do want to access it or grow their own can do that relatively safely without the threat of going to jail, which is where we should be. So, you know, all of those things happening, the underground movement that's happening here, you know, of Telegrass, obviously. Telegrass is a channel backed into Telegram with encrypted messaging that, you know, 23% of the Israeli population buy weed using that application from a range of different suppliers across the country that are home grows, imports, you know, everything under the radar, and it's a robust system generating billions and billions of shekels a year. So we're really turning that into a legal market. So if we follow the consumer behavior from that, which is home delivery, quality product reviews like Yelp, if we can copy that and transfer it, then we'll succeed. If we're going to rewrite everything and say, oh, we know what the consumer wants. No, you don't. The consumer knows what he wants, and he's told you, right? He's told Telegrass what he wants. Let's follow that.
That's really interesting because Telegrass, I mean, I know people that have, you know, been taken in by the police from Telegrass. It's interesting. Is that where we're getting a lot of the data for people planning, like, how we're going to work things? Is that officially being used as a source?
I'm using it as a source. It's an open, free data source. I get to see product from multiple suppliers. I get to see price. I get to see everything. So, yeah. And you know, we track a lot of what's not in stock, what's consistently going out of stock, because that's showing me demand. So we're seeing there that you know, Crumble, Bubble Hash, some of the more exotic extracts are not often in stock. So there is a market developing for that premium dab concentrate market, which is quite robust in the US, but pretty much non-existent a year ago in Israel.
It's so interesting. The cannabis market, it never kind of fails to surprise me or like bring a smirk to my face that there's this thing that's like not fully legal, but it's informing us about what can be. It's really interesting to not have a fully regulated market and to be able to take from unregulated sources, but that's really what's fueling things, which really is what cannabis is, because it obviously, you know, the legacy market predates anything. It's interesting. Yeah.
don't forget the underground market. It's one of the things I say to regulators all over the world. If your job should be to like stomp out the black market. In order to do that, you need a quality product at a good price. That's it. That's the whole formula of cannabis. Anything else messes that up. And they forget that. They know how to do it. Every regulator I've ever met, we're going to do it differently. They messed up here. We're going to take a little bit from Canada, a little bit from Colorado, right? But every place is different because you've got a history and a culture with cannabis that comes along with it. Israel's cannabis culture is developing very, very rapidly. Israelis are well-traveled. So they've come back from Amsterdam. They've seen Colorado. They've definitely seen, you know, more natural settings like India and South America. They're familiar with it and they're bringing that back and they're integrating that culture here in their lives. And that's, you know, we get California then. That's fabulous.
Right. Kind of switching gears a little bit, you talked a little bit about the psychedelic space, and I know that you guys are in the psychedelic space and looking to progress that. How much do you think that the cannabis industry has helped fuel more understanding and deeper understanding, even though it's different because, you know, the psychedelics is focusing much more on mental health than, you know, adult use or recreation. But how much do you think that's fueled that growth?
I think the destigmatization of plant-based medicine, which came as a result of cannabis, allowed psilocybin and, less so MDMA, but definitely mushrooms to find a place. And you look at some of the decriminalization initiatives like in Oregon and Colorado. If you can grow it in your own garden, then the government shouldn't have any problem with it, including, you know, one opium plant. If you like a poppy and it's pretty, go for it. It's something that regulators are learning to take their hands out of. And that destigmatization is a direct result of cannabis. But because psychedelics have been far more studied than cannabis was, right? So prohibition on cannabis started in the 30s and Israel was the only place you could do medical research or any sort of research, plant research on the cannabis plant. It didn't happen with psychedelics till the 60s. And even into the 70s and 80s, there were still LSD trials, MDMA, which are all you know, similar products to or a synthesized product of what you can get from nature. There are thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of clinical trials showing the efficacy of psychedelics for mental health. And we've got a huge mental health crisis going on, especially with COVID. And we've got a huge opioid addiction crisis going on. So these molecules, these plants can really start to affect a massive, massive problem. You look at just the veterans, the VA in the US spends about $60 billion on PTSD treatments a year. That's something we can do with medical mushrooms. The next revolution is all the other mushrooms. It doesn't have to be a psychedelic mushroom to get a good mental health effect. The microdosing movement, where you don't need a psychedelic dose, it might be a psychedelic drug, but at a very low dose, a tenth, maybe a 20th of a regular psychedelic trip dose, can leave you feeling wonderful. And so that's the revolution that's happening in psychedelics. What the psychedelic movement is afraid of is full recreation, because that could derail the wonderful medical work that's been done by people like Rick Doblin at MAPS for 50 years now. There's a hesitancy that recreational mushrooms or recreational psychedelics will derail the medicinal and the health benefits. So there is a dichotomy there as well in that market. There's the researchers, let's keep this medical FDA. Yes, it's going to take 7 years, but anything outside of that is like Timothy Leary handing out LSD to everyone to change the world. Maybe both are right, but which is the method that will get you the furthest and have the most impact? I do believe the FDA route is the one that will have better impact.
It's interesting because it's almost the opposite of what happens in cannabis, where the medical markets lead to adult use and everybody's like, oh yeah, this is great. Let's do adult use. It's interesting. It's the opposite.
I think it will for the microdose, right? Something that's completely safe. It's safe to drive on. It's safe to, and improves your life, improves your happiness. So that will become a recreational market. You know, dosages of psilocybin up to X per gram or per weight of your body, it should be legal today. So I think that will be. But you look in the Netherlands. I was there just before COVID, and every second store is now a mushroom store. Like 20 years ago, every second store was a cannabis store, a CBD store. It's fully open and wide open there, and generally tolerated and safe. You don't want to abuse psychedelics. These are laser treatments going directly to centers in your brain. They're tiring. It's thought provoking. It's something you want to do with a guide, with a therapist, with set and setting, with intention. And it works so much better when you have an intention than when you're trying to get drunk. Right? If you want to get drunk, drink some wine. You want to feel good, have a microdose. You want to have therapy, do it properly with a therapist in the right setting.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that's close to happening in Israel?
Yeah, so Israel is actually the second country outside of Canada. Was the first. Israel was the second for an MDMA trial. We have 50 patients, PTSD, doing MDMA therapy here in Israel. Run by a group connected with MAPS, Karen Salfati is her name, from Hakomi. Amazing. She trains trainers to treat people using some of these visionary plant medicines. And that's a huge move. Israel, when it's medical, they say, go, do it. How do we help? How can we help you? When it's recreational, they're way more hesitant. So I personally have applied to the Ministry of Health to grow medicinal mushrooms. There hasn't been too much hesitation in allowing me to do that. They want me to tell them where and how and what security measures. And, I don't yet know who I can sell a psilocybin mushroom or extract to. But I know that in order to solidify the industry, the supply chain has to be established. So that's why I applied, and I do see a future of researchers across the world putting their hand up and saying, I need access to GMP legal products so that I can do a clinical trial. And so Israel is ahead of the game on it, not on recreationals.
When it's medical, Israel runs fast and are willing to help. On recreational, it'll be slower, a much slower uptick. But there's, again, thousands of clinical trials on LSD, on MDMA, on psilocybin that have shown its value for mental health and happiness and creativity. Imagine a clinical trial for LSD on being creative. That's something that I'd love to explore.
You know, something that you said the first time that we talked that has really stuck with me is you said that we need to change our understanding of what it means to be high. That it's, kind of this like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo mentality that I think a lot of people grow up with about what it means to be high. But I think your definition of kind of expanding ourselves and opening ourselves up, I think especially because you're coming from a pharmacological background, is even that much more kind of convincing, maybe, for lack of a better word. But how much has your experience informed you? How much has the experience of seeing people get better informed you? How much is just your personality? What do you think affects kind of your view about these things?
I think it's helping people ultimately. We know these molecules help by guiding them, seeing it now with thousands of patients. And on my pharmaceutical side, I've probably, I don't know, in the last 5 years delivered over 100,000, maybe 150,000 prescriptions. My other business is prescriptions out of Israel to US patients to save money, because Israel has a national health system and we're capped at the price of prescriptions and the US doesn't have that. So helping people is what I try to do. And cannabis has helped more than anything else. So it gave me, you know, when I first turned onto it, and I was a recreational user since, you know, a teenager, when it turned on medical for me, it really was this aha moment where I saw a knee, but the 20% who are really, really sick and autoimmune diseases and immunosuppressed or cancers, that's where we can make the biggest impact. And that's why I guess I turned on to psychedelics as well, because the impact there on mental health. I was on an SSRI for over 10 years. SSRI is an antidepressant. Doctors in Israel love to prescribe them. There will be a SSRI problem like there is a opiate problem, because too many doctors are prescribing it without understanding the long-term side effects. It took me a long time to get off of that, and cannabis helped and psychedelics helped. So when you look at addiction and dependence, right, we're all dependent on oxygen. Are we addicted to oxygen? So like you said, what is high? What is making someone better? And if you make one person better and you can then make another person better and then you can make the whole of society better, that's impactful. And that's what I want to do.
Amen. Amen. That's a great place to end. Saul, is there anything else you want to leave listeners with before we go?
No, just stay tuned for lots of news coming out of Israel. We expect good things in 2021. The slump of cannabis has kind of come to an end. And, there's a bright future. There's a light at the end of the tunnel with Corona. And it's time to not look backwards. You know, coming into a new year, I guess your listeners, with Christmas and the holidays, it's good to shed some of the baggage and then look forward, as opposed to always correcting what happened in the past. And I think that's something that is now. To be in this moment right now with that ability is special.
Absolutely. And actually, you're reminding me of one thing that I didn't ask you that I wanted to ask you. And it's fitting because we started this podcast with Canatech, your guys' premier conference for cannabis. Where do you guys see that? And first of all, as a pharmacist, how do you see the vaccine kind of helping things along? And two, where's conference life in the cannabis industry in 2021 and beyond?
Yeah, so vaccine will provide people the confidence to travel and get out again. It'll provide the governments the ability to reduce restrictions on gatherings. So with Israel, looking to be one of the first countries in the world that reaches sort of an 80% vaccination rate of its entire population, we see Canatech coming back probably in the end of June at this point, if the vaccination stays on track and if there aren't any mutations and all of that that comes in. But we're optimistic that mid-year we can begin reconnecting the B2B aspects of the cannabis industry here in Israel, which is good timing pre-legalization. It's good timing for people who are now looking again at the cannabis industry, I guess, like we did 3 years ago from an investment perspective. It's a really good time to relaunch Canatech. So we're pretty excited about that. And then I've broken my crystal ball. So beyond that, I don't want to make any predictions.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, Saul, thank you again so much for coming on. It's a wealth of information on an area that we're excited to cover. And thank you for helping our part in the cannabis community become a part of it through Cannatech, through your work. And thanks for doing so much for the industry.
It's a pleasure. If I can help more people and more people can come into this industry and people can make a livelihood and be engaged, and that's fantastic. That's what we want.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, happy 2021. I hope to see you in person in June. And until then, stay safe, stay well.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Rena.
Thanks so much for listening to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Subscribe or follow us on Seeking Alpha, Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Stitcher. And we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other investors find our show. If you have feedback or questions, we'd love to hear from you at Rena Plus, the plus sign, CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. That's RENA plus CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.